Today on Growing Through Grace.
Paul is able to say to Agrippa, in all of the customs and questions with which the Jews have been accusing me, I'm glad you know the background. It's an interesting picture. Paul is swimming with the sharks here. There's nobody for him. Everyone is out for themselves.
Listening to Growing Through Grace with Pastor Jacob Elam of Morningstar Christian Chapel in Whittier, California. In our continued journey through the book of Acts, we pick up where we left off last time in Acts chapter 25. Pastor Jack has been discussing the exchange between Festus, the Roman governor, and Paul as he appeals his case to Rome. Now let's see what happens when King Agrippa comes on the scene and Festus hands the case over to him. And we'll join our teacher halfway through for the conclusion of this message. Here's Pastor Jack.
Felix always was stirring stuff up, and he hasn't been there more than 2 weeks, and his first case is going over his head. How's that going to make me look? And what charges am I going to send with him? They said he did this stuff. I don't even know what they're talking about. He doesn't want to stand in front of them. He'd rather risk it in Rome, and that could be death. I mean, that's a big gamble if you're wrong. So he confers with his council, he finds out what the law might be, and they tell him, look, if he has to go, he's got to go. And you can almost, I think you can almost hear like maybe bitter kind of anger in his voice. You want to talk to Caesar? Okay, you go talk to Caesar. Fine, that's where you're going. And he just dismisses him, and he sends the guys packing. But now he's got this dilemma, what do I do with Paul? And where does he go? Verse 13 tells us that after some days, King Agrippa and Bernice came to Caesarea to greet the new governor. And when they had been there for many days, Festus laid Paul's case before the king. And he said, now there is a certain man left here, a prisoner of Felix. So Festus is brooding. Everybody's coming to welcome the new guy on the block. When King Agrippa II, we'll call him KA2, shows up with Bernice to officially welcome Festus. Bernice was the daughter of King Agrippa I. When she was 16 years old, he died and she married her uncle, who then subsequently died as well. When he died, she moved in with this guy who happened to be her brother, in an incestual relationship and having an affair. All of Rome, as crooked as they were, frowned on this relationship. When later she wanted to get involved with Titus, the general, the guy who would overthrow Jerusalem, Rome warned Titus of her past, and he quickly got away from her and sent her back to her brother. Her brother, KA2, King Agrippa II, was 17 when his dad died. He was given this really, really small little land in northern Lebanon to rule. He would acquire more over the years, but let's just say he was an insignificant ruler with insignificant power that everyone kind of looked down their nose at that because this guy was just a creep, and everyone kind of knew it. KA2, King Agrippa II, was the last of the infamous Herods. There is nobody after him. He would die about 100 AD, didn't have any children. Both he and Bernice, his sister, converted to Judaism. Neither one of them practiced it at all, but they knew an awful lot about Jewish ways. In fact, when Paul finds himself standing before Agrippa to answer because old, you know, Portia there, Felix, he didn't know what to do, Paul is able to say to Agrippa, this guy, KA II, I'm so glad that I can stand free in front of you and talk about these things which I've been accused by the Jews, because I know you're an expert in all of the customs and questions with which the Jews have been accusing me. I'm glad you know the background. So he was able to say to this creepy guy, I'm glad it's you. It's an interesting picture. Paul is swimming with the sharks here, you know? There's nobody for him. Everyone is out for themselves. But needless to say, Paul was happy when he was finally got an opportunity to talk. Festus was in a quandary. He wanted help from this king, who was certainly more powerful than a governor. He turned on the charm. He let him hang out for many days, as many days as he wanted. Hey, it's on the house. We'll cover it. Here's the credit card, you know. Go down to town. But after many days of enjoying the royal treatment, Festus broached his dilemma with his guests. He says there in verse 14 at the end about being left a prisoner from Felix's time. Verse 15, and about whom the chief priests and the elders of the Jews have informed me when I was in Jerusalem asking for a judgment against him. To them I answered, it is not the custom of the Romans to deliver any man to destruction before the accused meets the accusers face to face and has an opportunity to answer for himself concerning the charges against him. That sounds pretty reasonable, doesn't it? Therefore, when they had come together without any delay the next day, well, forgot about those 10 days of delay. The next day I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought in. And when the accusers came and stood up, they brought no accusation against him of such things as I had supposed. But they had questions about him, about their own religion, about a certain Jesus who had died, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. That's really what the issue was. And because I was uncertain about such questions, I asked whether he was willing to go to Jerusalem and there be judged concerning these matters. But when Paul appealed to be reserved for the decision to Augustus, I commanded him be kept until I could send him off to Caesar. So he tells the situation in light of his innocence, right? I got to it really quick. Didn't say about the 10 days of unofficial business eating Jewish food. The real issue as he saw it, verse 19, and this is his summation of what he understands. Yeah, it's about something about the religious law and his belief that there's a Jesus who's alive that was dead. Right? That's what Paul's message was to everyone that he spoke to. We don't have that written down every time the Lord spoke through Paul, but we have it referenced here by the governor himself. Festus had a hard heart, it seems. The real issue for him was the resurrection. He was right. But again, the most famous preacher in the first century stands before him. And here's his impression. Yeah, it's a religious kind of decisions, and they're not getting along, and something about a dead guy who's alive, and Paul says he's alive. They're weird, man. I don't know what to do with them. So he wants to go to Caesar and just send him, you know. But now I don't know what to say about him. So he says in verse 20, I was unsure about those questions, those religious things. I asked him if he wants to go work it out in Jerusalem with, you know, his peers. He doesn't want to go there. He wants to go talk to Caesar. And I was surprised because, man, he just raised the ante. You know, this is dangerous. So I have to send him. I don't know what to write under the charges list. I don't know what to charge him with. And I hope, King Agrippa II, that you could help me. King Agrippa II had heard of Paul over the years. I think he saw it as a great opportunity to have a conversation with him personally, to supposedly help him come up with some charges, because the governor couldn't do anything. And so in verse 22, Agrippa says to Festus, I'd like to hear from the man myself. Tomorrow, he said, then you shall hear of him. So Agrippa, you know, he is told by the governor, I don't hand over prisoners. We don't let someone go to their death until they have a fair trial. I don't know what to do with this guy and all. And Agrippa said, I'd like to see him. And you know, Porcius couldn't be happier. All right, man, please take him for yourself. And Festus, well, he's punting and he's happy about it, right? Now, all of the Herods seem to be involved with the early church in one way or another. There's Herod the Great. He killed all of the babies in Bethlehem when he heard that the Messiah had been born, and he wanted to make sure he got to him. So every child 2 years old, boy child 2 years old and under, he ordered killed. Herod Antipas killed John the Baptist. King Agrippa I killed James in prison and then was going to kill Peter until the Lord got him you know, out of the way, right? He was a divine jailbreak. And now here's the last Herod. You want to say good riddance to these guys. But anyway, he's the one that Paul now has to stand before to make his case and hopefully get a fair judgment. Verse 23, on the next day when Agrippa and Bernice had come with great pomp, and they had entered the auditorium with the commanders and all the prominent men of the cities, at Festus's command, Paul was brought in. So in the morning, everyone went to the amphitheater. By the way, in the amphitheater was where King Agrippa's his dad had died. You might remember the story that he had come with royal, you know, pageantry, that the men of Tyre wanted food from him, and they said, "Well, your voice is like the voice of a god." And he went, "Yes, it is." You know, he was very proud of himself, and the Lord had had enough of this guy with his, you know, with his chest out, and he died, you know, a little while later, being eaten by worms from the inside out. That was his pop in the same place the judgment had fallen. Now this guy comes in, does the same thing. You know, he's riding on his high horse, everybody's applauding. He's got all the, you know, the pomp and circumstance that comes from to a guy who's really a non-status guy at all, right? But Festus is piling it on. He gives him like a hero's welcome because he needs his help. And the guy couldn't be happier with it. So it reminded me of Jesus saying in Matthew, I think chapter 20, the rulers of the Gentiles, they love to lord over each other and exercise great authority, but that's not the way we are. You want to be great in my kingdom, you serve all. This is just the opposite, you know? Everyone's trying to get this guy on board. The flesh knows no limits. And I suspect that Paul was very underdressed for this occasion. Coming out of prison, having been there for several years, not having a lot of support, I think it would have been a really kind of uncomfortable place for him to stand. There's a description of Paul in 2 Corinthians. We're going to be starting that this week on Sunday mornings, but in chapter 10, so we probably won't get there this Sunday. It says that his letters are weighty, but his body presence is weak, and his speech is contemptible. And most of the descriptions that we have read of Paul kind of describe him that way in history. He's short, he's bull-legged, he had kind of a hooked nose with a little hair and a bulging, weeping eye. That's not a good-looking guy. And poor guy's just standing in front of these folks, and it didn't move him at all. After all, he'd seen heaven, and he'd been to heaven and seen Jesus, you know? This was not a big deal. But to the world, this looked like, man, the end of the world. So there's this gathering of this, you know, this assembly gathering in Caesarea to hear from the apostle and hopefully come up with some charges. Verse 24 says, and Festus said, King Agrippa and all the men who are here present with us, you see this man amongst whom the whole assembly of the Jews have petitioned me. They petitioned me in Jerusalem and here. They're crying out that he was not fit to live any longer. Now, when I found that he had done nothing or committed nothing deserving of death, and that he himself had appealed to Caesar, I decided to send him, but I have nothing certain to write to my Lord concerning him. Therefore, I've brought him out before you, and especially before you, O King Agrippa, so that after the examination has taken place, I might have something to write. For it seems to me unreasonable to send a prisoner and not to specify the charges that are against him. Festus's flowery opening tells you his plans were to get some help. We're not going to read chapter 26 until next week, but I would say this to you about that. If King Agrippa thought that he was going to be examining Paul, he was much mistaken. By the time he was done, Paul was examining him, and he was having to answer for his life, and there was a mess in his life for sure. Chapter 26 is the longest of any of Paul's responses in the book of Acts. We're going to take it all in 1 week or maybe two, but it's a long... You know, he gets his time to pitch in, if you will. And God has preserved the sermon for us because I think he wants us to put ourselves where Paul was and see how he now defends himself. I want you to notice in verse 25 that Festus said he was innocent. In verse 27 said, there's no charges I can bring against him, that Paul has been here for 2 years. And now he appealed to Caesar, so I've got to send him. Here's what he could have said. Paul, you're not guilty, buddy, and you don't have to appeal to Caesar. You can just go home. Being the governor, I can do that. Man, governors today think they can do this stuff. I'm sure he could have done it in the Roman is the way of things. But he had been afraid of the Jews in Jerusalem. He still wanted to gain their favor. And now he hoped not to lose face with Rome. And so Paul, having used his rights as a Roman citizen to ask for the trial, is given it. A couple of things I want to tell you just in your head. Paul will end up in Rome eventually and spend a long time waiting for this trial. The Bible does not give to us the results of the trial. History does. Paul will appear before Nero and be declared innocent. From prison waiting, he will write a lot of the epistles. We'll cover those when we get there. He will get out for about 18 months or so. Where he goes, we do not know. There's very little ability to track Paul's movement after he gets out of jail. He is rearrested by Nero under the same charges of being a Christian and all, and eventually writing to Timothy, his second letter, said, I know that I'm done. You know, that there's no hope left. The Lord has shown me I'm out of here. So then Paul is beheaded and he was killed after being kept in the Mamertine prison in Rome, which if you ever have a chance to go with us on the footsteps of Paul, that's still there too. But needless to say, that's kind of Paul's, you know, next 5 years. Jail, horrendous trip to Rome, waiting for a trial, finally got freed. In fact, in one of the epistles, he said that he believed he was going to be free, and he was. And then for 18 months or so, he lives kind of out of the limelight. We're not really sure. There's some mentions in historical books, but they're small enough and not verified enough to preach his gospel, if you will. But on the other hand, that's the way Paul ends up. One of the things that we find is the Lord gives these whole chapters to, you know, the accusation before Felix and before Agrippa and before Festus. It's how many men are moved by others, right? That there's something about living in this culture where we are oftentimes driven by what people think rather than what God might want. We did a study a couple of Sundays ago, maybe it's Proverbs 29, verse 25, about the fear of man brings a snare. And certainly, you know, look at these would-be Roman leaders. They were more concerned with their political gain than they were with doing the right thing. They were more concerned with their status than they were with justice. They were moved by peer pressure. Solomon tells us many people are more concerned with what man thinks than what God thinks, that there's more of a fear of man in their hearts than a fear of God. That's kind of frightening, but it's true. Jesus said in Matthew 10:28, you should never be afraid of somebody that can kill your body and then has nothing more than he can do with you. And then there's a comma, and then it says, but, or maybe there's a period, but it says, but then you should rather fear him who is able to destroy both body and soul in hell. In other words, if you're going to pick someone to fear the God who has a say over your eternity, not over the temporal nature of man who can, you know, they can stifle you and make you suffer a little in this life, but they certainly can't do more than that. Fear will always, especially of men, will lead to great sin. You see it here. We went over that, I think, on that Sunday morning. Aaron and the golden calf blamed the people. Saul at Gilgal, when he became a priest, though he wasn't called to be one, told Samuel, I was worried along with the people. I was always blaming someone else. The fear was always driven by another hand. Samuel didn't come in time. Saul took it upon himself. Peter stands with soldiers on the night Jesus is betrayed, and even a little girl at the gate, a young maiden is the description, makes him lie. He's fearful not just of a big, tall soldier with a sword. He's fearful of a little girl going, you know, answer the door and open the door, because the fear of man will bring a snare. That's what the Bible says. Peter later in Galatia, the men of James, these guys showed up. Peter moves to the kosher table. Barnabas follows. Everybody stumbled. Fear of man. And Paul said, I think in the original Greek, dude. Pretty sure that's what it said. Dude, really? Pilate was afraid to do the right thing for Jesus. Surrendered an innocent man to the crowds because he was feared. Man, and notice, here's Festus. And he wants to keep people happy. And Felix, who wants to curry favor. Not only are they afraid, they're self-serving in their fear. They just want to gain, right? We read in John 12, I think, that amongst the rulers on the synagogue in the Sanhedrin, that many of those 70 members believed in Jesus, believed in him quietly and personally. But because of the Pharisees, they didn't confess him, because the cost would have been you'd have been put out of the synagogue, and so you would, you know, have no support, no social life, no doctor to go to, no work to report for, no income, that you would just be shunned in the culture. And so it says that they love the praises of men more than the praises of God. So they believe, but the fear of men and the cost of following shut their mouths and shut down their lives. The fear of man can keep you from being a witness for the Lord. It did for them. I thought about Elijah, who was, you know, he single-handedly fought off 450 prophets of Baal. Watch the Lord wipe them out. Pretty cool. One word, though, from Queen Jezebel that she was going to be killing him by morning had him running for his life. And he ran further than any man should run. And when he finally got to the middle of nowhere in a cave deep in the Sinai, his prayer to the Lord was, just kill me. Sounded a lot like Moses all of a sudden. And he even said to the Lord, you must be happy to have me. I'm the only guy left that's serving you. And the Lord said, you're an idiot. It's the original Hebrew. I know Hebrew very well. He said, I got 7,000 other people I can count on. So would you like to go do what I've given you to do? You want me to send somebody else? No, I'll go. Fear of man. I see it. I was talking to one of the college kids today who was taking a science class in college, and this teacher was just selling evolution like it made sense. How absurd. It's so absurd. And I said, would anybody stand up and say that's hogwash? He goes, no, nobody wants to be unscientific. Well, the truth is going to come out one day, and someone's going to say, the king's naked. You know, this is not true. Fear of man brings a snare. But if you fear the Lord, what does it say? What does that verse say? Do you remember? Whoever puts his trust in the Lord will be safe. You guys got to pay more attention on Sundays. Apparently, I'm starting to feel like I'm not getting anywhere. The best answer for the fear of man is trust the Lord, right? Trust the Lord and be honest and tell the truth. In the same way that I trusted the Lord to be saved, I have to trust in the Lord to overcome the fear of man. So Paul's in a weird place. You know, he served the Lord. This is the result of a faithful life. He's not getting punished. He's being used by God. And all around him are people self-serving. The Jews want him dead. Felix wants him to get money. Festus wants to do someone a favor. No one wants to look bad. You know, they're all just using this guy, and he's standing fast in his faith in the Lord.
Now, what an interesting comparative. Freedom really is relative, and according to God's word, we're only really free when we walk with him. We've been listening to a study taken from Acts chapter 25. This has been the second half and conclusion of a two-part study taught by Pastor Jack Abelin. If you'd like to get the entire message, we do have that available for you. All you need to do to order, simply contact us and ask for study number 3085. When you get a hold of us, be sure to mention the call letters of the radio station that you're listening to. And as we're studying through the book of Acts, we'll discover together how the spread of the gospel penetrated geographical, social, racial, and religious barriers throughout the Roman world. If you'd like to study the book of Acts for yourself, we recommend you order the Morning Star Christian Chapel Inductive Bible Study. Now, this written study is designed to help you go through the book of Acts and discover the rich truths of God's Word for yourself. This workbook has cross-references and questions to answer for every verse in the book of Acts. So to order the Acts Inductive Bible Study, or to get today's message, Just dial our toll-free phone number at 866-88-GRACE. That's 866-884-7223. Again, that's 866-884-7223. If you'd like, you can order by mail. Just address your letter to Growing Through Grace, P.O. Box 1954, Whittier, California, 90609. And for your convenience, not only these resources, but all of our others are available online at growingthroughgrace.com. Again, just log on to growingthroughgrace.com. And that will bring things to a close for us today. We do appreciate you tuning in. So until next time, as you daily walk with our Lord Jesus Christ, may you continue to grow in His grace. Growing Through Grace is a listener-supported ministry brought to you by Morningstar Christian Chapel in Whittier, California, a Calvary Chapel outreach.